Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Soleri Report. I had the absolute honor of listening to and meeting Bobbi Ann Cox in the last week. And the first thing I said to her is, I need to get you on the Soleri Report. We need to make it public. And we need to do everything we can do to help get the word out. So I'm going to ask you at the end of our interview to get the word out. And let's do everything we can to help what is arguably a great American hero, Bobbi. You are just a force. So Bobbi had a very successful career at a major law firm in Manhattan, Nixon Peabody. I used to deal with them when I was on Wall Street, and then started her own practice north of New York, dealing with overreach by municipalities, real estate, property rights, real estate transactions. And then when the pandemic started, discovered that what was happening in New York were serious violations of the law. And she tried to find a constitutional attorney to help her. And when she couldn't, she decided to take it on herself, which, if you know anything about the law, that's an extraordinary thing. And she's going to tell us all about it today. And we're going to talk about her New York case. But this case is so important to not just in New York, but every state in the country. It's a battle that's happening in the law and in the courts in every state, and it's critical that we win, and it's critical that we do everything to help Bobbi and the people she's representing win. So I don't want to take your thunder. I want you to tell us all about, but congratulations on everything you've done. So you look remarkably healthy for anybody who decided to reinvent themselves as also a constitutional scholar and attorney in the middle of their career.
Well, thank you, Catherine. Thank you for having me on. I really appreciate it. And I admire the work that you do as well. So it's great to be here to talk to you about this. Probably a lot of your viewers don't know about this quarantine lawsuit that has been going on for the past 2 years in New York State, but I'm so glad to be here and discuss it and explain the case to them.
So tell us how it happened that you got involved and then describe how the case has proceeded so far.
Sure. So I'm a New York State attorney. I've been practicing law here for 25 years. And prior to March of 2020, I was focused on real estate law. So property tax valuations and grievances and tax certiorari's. And real estate transactional work. And then when March came along, 2020, and, COVID hit, the New York State governor at the time, Andrew Cuomo, he basically ordered a lockdown almost immediately. He was given this unbelievable power by the New York State legislature in the beginning of March of 2020, where they allowed him to make directives. They called them directives. But really, it was the ability to make law. And that's not constitutional in and of itself. The legislature, as per the Constitution, not just in New York State, but the federal Constitution, the legislature is the branch of government that makes laws. The executive branch, where the governor sits, they're supposed to execute the laws that are made by the legislature. And then, of course, the third branch is the judicial branch, and they're supposed to adjudicate when there's arguments about the law. So our governor at the time took this amazing power, and he gave a power to the Department of Health to create a regulation, and they created this isolation and quarantine procedures regulation, which was found at 10 NYCRR 2.13. And the funny thing about the regulation was it was almost a copy and paste of a law that, or a bill that failed to become a law for 7 years. And the Department of Health basically took the language of that failed bill and tweaked it a little bit, stripped out any sort of due process protections whatsoever, and just created this unbelievable power for them to pick and choose which New Yorkers they could lock up or lock down with no proof that you're sick, no proof that you've been exposed to a communicable disease, and they could lock you up or lock you down in your home, or they could have removed you from your home with the force of police and put you into a detention center of their choosing. No time restraints, so it could have been for days or weeks or months, and no age restrictions. So they could have done this to you, but also to your child or your elderly parent. And there was no process built into that regulation that would describe how you got out of isolation or quarantine once the government put you in there. And I like to give this example so that people really understand what that means. When we were arguing this case at the trial court level back in May of 2022, the court asked the attorney the attorney general's office, who represents the governor and the Department of Health, he said, let's say you take a family and let's say you put them into isolation or into quarantine somewhere in a facility, let's say a hospital or something. Once they're in there, how do they get out? And the attorney general, you know, the representative thought about it for a minute and then said, you know, well, I guess they could hire a lawyer and they could sue us. So you would have to hire a lawyer once you're locked up or locked down, and you maybe don't even have access to the outside world, because the regulation also said that the Department of Health could tell you what you could and couldn't do while you were in isolation or quarantine. And you're supposed to hire a lawyer and sue your way out. I mean, it's the antithesis of due process. It's shocking.
I've sat down and read the regulation. Basically, a governor could dictate that their political opponent be put under quarantine and have to somehow magically get a lawyer and fight their way out. In other words, if you wanted to use this for political or economic purposes, it's an amazing weapon.
Yeah, the language in the regulation does not have a restriction on who can be locked up or locked down. And as I said before, they didn't have to prove you were sick.
Right.
It didn't even have to be a declared state of emergency. So they could have just used this regulation whenever they wanted. There didn't have to be a public health crisis declared in the state or declared in the country. They could just lock people up or lock them down for no reason, with no proof. It's astonishing.
Now, you brought your case in April 2022 on behalf of a senator and two assemblymen, correct?
Correct. Yes, I represent a group of New York State lawmakers. My lead plaintiff is Senator George Borrello, and then Assemblyman Chris Teague, and then Assemblyman Mike Lawler, who actually now is Congressman Mike Lawler because he ran for Congress a couple years ago and won. So I represent them, as well as a citizens group called Uniting New York State. And we brought this lawsuit in April of 2022, and we fought it out in the trial court level here in New York State court system, and we won that case.
Won it fast. So July is fast. Is that not pretty quick if you brought it in April and you got a decision in July?
When we challenged the regulation in April, it was an emergency regulation, which means under New York state law, it only lasts a couple of months. But what the governor was doing and the Department of Health was doing was every couple months, they would just reissue the same regulation over and over again. And they were doing that while they were going through the process and working to make it a permanent regulation.
Okay.
We sued when it was still an emergency regulation, and we were successful. So I think the court was trying to get us through quickly because we needed a decision before the emergency regulation expired and before the Department of Health tried to reissue the regulation again.
So tell us what the judge said, because it was a strong decision.
Yeah, the judge wrote a 14-page decision, and he made it very clear that they had the governor, the Department of Health, the Commissioner of Health, and New York State had violated the separation of powers doctrine, which basically just means we have three branches of government, each branch with their own power and authority. And he ruled that they had breached that separation of powers, that the governor and her Department of Health had reached into the other branch, the legislative branch, took a power from that branch to make law, and then made this regulation. I mean, they called it a regulation, they called it a rule, but really, when you look at it and you put it up against our four-pronged test here in New York State, it is a law. And agencies can't make law. Governors can't make law. So he struck it down. He said it was null and void. He prohibited them from reissuing the regulation. He prohibited them from enforcing the regulation. And because of that ruling, as of today, that this regulation does not exist here in New York State.
So then after, so there was an election and then the governor appealed. Correct.
Yes.
Okay. So what happened next?
So in November of 2022, we had a gubernatorial election, and our attorney general was also up for election. And as were all the state senators and all the state assembly members. And they sat on that decision. They didn't do anything. And then once the election had passed and the governor had won and the Letitia James, the attorney general, had won, then they filed their appeal. And so I spent much of last year fighting them on appeal, which we had oral arguments in September, this past September. And it was at the appellate court, which is based in Rochester, New York. And 400 people showed up to that oral argument. People were starting to hear about the case. I've done many podcasts and radio interviews, and I've written so many articles, and articles have been written about the case. So people started to understand what was at stake. 400 people showed up to the courthouse, which was astonishing. And they were really upset about this, the fact that the governor was appealing. You know, the governor, the attorney general, they're using our tax dollars to fight me on this case, right? So they're using our tax dollars to try to get back a power which they know is unconstitutional. It's already been deemed unconstitutional by a court of law, but they're trying to get it flipped, right? So they did actually, the appellate court ended up 2 months after we had our oral arguments, they ended up rendering their decision. It was a 5-judge panel, all appointed by various governors of New York State. And they reversed the lower court and they threw our case out and said we didn't have standing to bring the case in the first place.
So members of the legislature, what they're saying is members of the legislature do not have standing to bring a case about the executive branch engaging in something which is a violation of the Constitution, usurping the legislature's power. If they don't have standing, who does? Santa Claus?
You know, nobody has standing, because what the attorney general was arguing on appeal and what the appellate court panel ultimately adopted, the argument they adopted was the attorney general's argument, which is not only flawed logically, but it's flawed in accordance with our New York State controlling case law. So it runs opposed to our controlling New York State case law. But what they said was, in essence, well, there would be a large pool of people who could potentially bring a lawsuit and have standing against this regulation, implying that you would have to be one of the people locked up or locked down by the regulation in order to have standing to challenge the regulation. But that is not true. And I explain that in part of my brief, is that it's not true, because if you think about it, quarantines, traditionally in New York State, the quarantines during the COVID, couple of years of COVID, were, you know, you had to isolate for what, 10 days, 14 days, something like that, depending on where you were and what the rule was and whatever. So there's no way somebody locked up pursuant to this regulation would be able to find an attorney to represent them, then the attorney have the ability to draft the lawsuit, file the lawsuit, and get in front of a judge in a 10-day or 14-day or even a 21-day span. I mean, lawsuits don't go that fast. So right, a person would be released from isolation or quarantine well before the court ever saw or heard the lawsuit. And so then you have an issue of mootness.
Right. They won't have standing. You just let them out and then they don't have standing.
Right. So then they're going to say, well, no, it's moot. Look, they're let out. There's no more injury here. They're not still being held against their will. You know, so then nobody on the planet actually has standing to bring this lawsuit.
I want to come back to the judge's decision, but what was the next step at that point for you?
So my plaintiffs and I filed an appeal with the Court of Appeals, which is the highest state court here in New York State. We did that about a month ago. And of course, the Attorney General put in opposition papers. they don't think that the Court of Appeals should hear this case. There's no right to hear this case here. You know, standing is not a constitutional issue. You know, it's very shocking and yet very disappointing. But so we are waiting on the Court of Appeals now to let us know if they are going to hear this case automatically. And if so, what is the timeline? What are the dates that they're going to have briefing and stuff like that? So we are in a waiting period right now. Mm-hmm. So that's where the status of the appeal sits.
So one of the things I've heard you say, and you do a very effective job at saying this, and Mary Holland is the other attorney I've heard really make an effective case on this, because Children's Health Defense has about 50 cases in the court, and that is that courts follow culture. Could you tell us about that? Because it's very important over the next month, 2 months, 3 months, what we all do to help the culture express to the courts how we want this to go.
Yeah. So, you know, courts are the judges, whether it's a single judge presiding over a trial or a trial court, or it's a panel of judges, you know, judges are human and judges will react to what society is doing and thinking and saying. And so, you know, at the height of COVID 2020, 2021, even into 2022, you know, people were so fearful. And a lot of times, especially in 2020 and into 2021, people didn't know really what COVID was. You know, how do you treat it? Can you use certain medications? Can't you do these things like masking and standing 6 feet apart? Do those things work? You know, there was a lot of questions, a lot of confusion. And the courts only react to that because they're human. So, you know, there were a lot of cases that were brought by other attorneys, whether it was in New York State or in other states around the country, where they were trying to challenge the breach of the Constitution and the breach of civil rights, because the government in many states, not just New York, and definitely at the federal level, started overstepping tremendously during COVID, and they haven't stopped yet, because they felt like, oh, it's an emergency. We can, you know, we must keep you safe. Everybody listen to us. We must keep you safe. But what they were doing to quote unquote keep you safe was taking your rights away from you and your freedoms away from you and doing things that the government doesn't have the authority to do. And so a lot of times they got away with that because the courts were responding to the fear of the people. Mm-hmm. And the courts felt like they, in some instances, had to protect the people. And so they would side with the government in these cases. But we cannot allow that to happen. You know, the Constitution is not suspended in times of emergency. In fact, it's during emergencies that the Constitution is most important because it preserves our rights and it prevents the government from overstepping too much and violating our rights.
Right.
So we cannot just throw the Constitution in the garbage because there's an emergency.
So I, one of the things that happened to me when I heard, because I'd followed the coverage of your efforts, and but I had not focused. It wasn't until you told me that the on the second round that a five judge panel voted 5-0 against. Now, given the law and the case law, I can only think of two reasons why that would happen. One is because the New York Fed wants it to happen, and the other is because there is some kind of national security directive, which is not transparent, that is essentially requiring them to go in a certain direction. Now, I watched during the pandemic all sorts of healthcare directives being used not to protect anybody's health, but being used to re-engineer the financial system and the economy. And so my immediate suspicious mind would be, well, why, if you were in the New York and Wall Street area, would you want these kinds of powers? And I can see in a financial crisis why these powers would come in very, very handy if you look at what the central bankers are up to. And that's when I realized, I said to you, what, you know, the New York area is full of hedge fund managers and money managers and very wealthy people. Surely they understand the risk that this could cause them. I mean, if you're not doing what the government wants you to do, and the government has the powers to put you in quarantine without you being sick and to keep you there without due process, wouldn't you be afraid? I mean, I know you would, because you saw it and recognized the danger. But it's remarkable that the financial industry in New York does not see this danger coming.
Well, I have to tell you, it sounds, maybe it sounds shocking to people, maybe it doesn't, but not many people know about this lawsuit because the mainstream media will not pick this up. I mean, I've been fighting this case for 2 years, and I can't tell you how many interviews I've done, and even my plaintiffs. I mean, Senator Borrello has done a ton of interviews himself. Assemblyman Tague has done interviews about this. We've issued press statements about this. We had a press conference when we first launched this case 2 years ago, but the mainstream media does not want to report on this. You know, I find it fascinating. If you would think, if you saw a battle going on, especially in New York, but in any state, between a sitting governor and a group of legislators, New York state lawmakers, over their jockeying over who's got the power to do this.
Right. I mean, you would think the media would pick up on it.
You would think it would be, I mean, especially because the topic is so toxic. Quarantine facilities, forced quarantine facilities, where you have no rights and you have no due process. You have no warning. There's not even a warning built into that regulation, which means they could just walk up to you on the street, or they could knock on your door while you're having dinner one night. There's no notice requirement in that regulation.
Right.
You know, you would think that a battle like that would be front page news. No, it's not even anywhere in the news.
Well, so let me give you an example, because I call these things inversion. In 2018, the White House and the Congress, both Senate and House, Republican and Democrat, all got together and agreed to adopt an administrative policy that basically said the U.S. government does not have to obey the constitutional provisions related to financial management, or the laws related to financial management, or the regulations related to financial management. Now, as a matter of procedure, the Congress can't prove an executive branch administrative policy to break all the laws. That's not, you know, the legislature has to go through a certain process to make a law. So the notion that they can issue an administrative policy that allows you to break all the constitutional provisions as well as the laws and the regulations, and allow the government to to run secret books with no notice? Because now you're talking about being able to steal essentially all the money on the planet, you know, secretly. And they did that, and it's an inversion. And it's very similar in my mind as a layperson as to what they're doing by allowing the executive branch to make laws. They're writing documents and saying, okay, well, this has the power of law, but it doesn't. It's a little bit like the WHO has been issuing proclamations, we have a treaty, when in fact they never took a vote, and procedurally they don't have a treaty. They just pretend. So it's law by pretense.
Yes. No, you're right, because what happened in this quarantine lawsuit, for example, is that generally speaking, just so people understand, generally speaking, how the three branches of government work is that, you know, it's checks and balances. So one of those checks and balances, so that one branch doesn't become more powerful than the other two, right, is that an agency, which is in the executive branch, it sits under the governor, or at the federal level, it sits under the president. An agency can't make rules or regulations unless they have a directive from the legislature to make those rules and regulations. So if you think about it, it's logical. The legislature has to say to the executive branch, okay, here's the law we just passed. Here's the policy we just made. Now, go ahead, enforce it. And if you need to write a law, I mean, if you need to write a regulation or a rule to help you enforce it, okay. But those regulations or those rules that they write have to comport with the law that authorized them to write the rule or write the regulation. It can't conflict with the law that's authorizing them. And agencies can't just do whatever they want. If agencies could do whatever they want, then we would have the elevation of that branch of government above the other branches, right, because that means no matter what laws the legislature passes, if the executive branch doesn't like it, people sitting in an agency somewhere who are not elected by you and me could just write a rule that overrules the law that was just passed by the legislature.
Right.
You can't have that. You can't have people that just sit there. They're government bureaucrats. They're government employees. They don't get to make the rules that we live under.
Right.
The legislature who we elect every couple of years, that's who gets to make the laws. Because if we don't like the laws they make, we're supposed to vote them out.
So the other thing that really struck me when I was listening to you describe the regulation and the litigation is, I dealt with Andrew Cuomo, who was governor when this started. I dealt with him, including on the private prison issue, and we watched a series of laws go into effect that were literally used to round up and clear out neighborhoods in a way that made a lot of money for the real estate interests. And I wrote a book about it called Dylan Reed and the Aristocracy of Stock Profits. And so I got looking significantly into prison policies and prison economics, and including looking at sort of the economics of quarantine camps. And I always said the reason, you know, occasionally you'll get these fear stories, FEMA's creating all these concentration camps and we're all going to be moved into camps. And the reason I've never worried about that is because if you look at the economics of controlling people in camps, it's very expensive. You know, it's so unless you're doing target political opposition, you wouldn't necessarily roll somebody up. But if you look at what the central bankers are building up to with digital IDs and CBDCs and their ability to literally put people to turn your home or your car into a concentration camp or your 15-minute city into a concentration camp or a quarantine camp, you know, the digital technology gives you the ability to do the equivalent of quarantine camps at low cost and digitally. And when you take this regulation and you, in your imagination, think, well, how might they extend this by digital means? You're talking about something that could be used to, you know, dramatically improve central control within the state of New York or any state that did this. So I'm concerned not just about what's in the rule now, but if they decide to implement it using digital technology to basically do free range quarantine camps.
Yeah. And this, the other thing about this case, along the lines of what you're saying right now, is if they get away with this, so to speak, and the Department of Health is allowed to make a regulation that does not comport with our New York state laws, does not comport with a constitution, and in essence is allowed to overwrite or overrule legislation made by the legislature, you're going to see, to your point, agencies writing whatever rules they want,
right?
And not just the Department of Health.
Right.
We have lots of agencies, right?
Right.
They'll all start to write whatever rules they want. They won't care what the Constitution says. They won't care what the state law says or the federal law says, because look, now they just got away with it. Now they just got away with it in a court of law. So they'll just keep pointing to that case and saying, well, look, it happened in New York. Well, look what they did in New York. You know, so it's very dangerous to allow this to stand.
Right now in the financial world, David Webb wrote a book called The Great Taking, talking about how they might take our securities. And If you look at all the different ways they have of taking our securities, there are many more dangerous ones than the ones he posited. And there's a push right now in front of the legislature to fix the UCC on the theory that's going to protect them from taking your securities. But you know what I want to say to every hedge fund manager in the world? Don't worry about taking your securities. If they take your body and keep it, they'll be able to take your securities, no problem. So, you know, this is where the danger lies. What you're litigating is how when Klaus Schwab says it's 2030 and you have no assets, this is how they get your assets. This is how they, you know, your chief asset being your body and your mind, your person. If they can throw you in a quarantine camp with no proof of any sickness or anything else and keep you there with no due process, tell me they're not going to get your real estate if they want it, right?
Yeah, no, it's horrendous. I've been practicing law for 25 years. I've never read anything like this. I mean, the regulation, I encourage people to go and read it. It's on my plaintiff, Uniting New York State, has a web page on their website that's solely about this case. And you can link there to the judge's decision. And you can also see a lot of press releases and photos and our press conference about the case on that webpage, unitingnys.com. But you have to read this regulation.
I know you have to read it. That's what you got me to do when I saw your presentation. You got me to read it. And I knew it was bad and I'd read the headlines. But when I read it, I was like, oh, my God, they can take everything.
And they can put, and people keep asking me, you know, a common question I get is, well, where are the camps? You know, what, have you seen any of the camps in person? The regulation says they don't even have to build any place. They can commandeer any property,
right,
and turn it into a quarantine facility.
Right.
So you could have a multifamily house, you could have a hotel, you could have even a prison, right? They're emptying out the prisons in New York because, you know, it's too racist to have prisons, and everybody can, you know, spreads COVID to have prisons, you know, so we have empty prisons. They could use a school. They could use anywhere they want.
They can take whatever they want.
Yeah. Yeah.
They can take you and they can take your property with no due process.
You would hope that if they took your property to turn it into a quarantine facility, you'd hope they'd, you know, there's supposed to be compensation for takings, but who knows? I mean, this is the problem. When you don't have law and order,
right,
everything goes.
Right.
You can't have law and order just in one section of our society and then no law and order in the rest of the society. It doesn't work.
Well, but here's this another problem with this. Someone can say, well, they can't put everybody in quarantine camps. They don't need to put everybody in quarantine camps. If you have this power, all you have to do is set a sufficient number of examples to put the fear of God into everybody, and then you've got total control.
Yeah.
So it's the power that gives you the control. And it gives you control not just of a healthcare situation, it gives you control of everything. Because there's, you know, you're talking about complete tyranny. It's remarkable.
It's complete tyranny. I mean, the definition of tyranny is when someone in power takes power that they're not entitled to, right? They just give it to themselves. That's exactly what happened here. And I cannot warn people enough that if they get away with it now, they will learn that they can do it again.
Right.
And that is just human nature. So once they get away with it here, with this topic, they're going to try it here with that topic, and it's going to just blossom into a nightmare of the breakdown of law and order. It is very...
Well, but Bobby, I'm convinced it is very much at the heart of taking assets. So, you know, and I hate to say it, sometimes there are many people who relate more to the fear of them taking your assets than taking yourself or your children. And, you know, because they can't fathom that that would happen.
Right.
You know, this is the basis of in New York State of taking. If you're worried about you're going to lose your securities, here's how it's going to happen. This is it. It's stunning.
The language is very broad, and it says they can tell you what you can and cannot do while you're in lockup or while you're in lockdown. And it's fascinating to read. It's all at the whim of the commissioner of health, right? Whoever the commissioner of health is, or whoever is running the local health department. And they say in their papers, if you read the papers in the trial court, you know, from the attorney general, you read what their argument is. They say point blank, they said it at oral arguments too, at the trial court level, we need this power to be able to control 19 million New Yorkers whenever we want. And we need that power centralized in Albany at the state level, instead of allowing smaller microcosms around the state, you know, county health departments, for example, to do this, or judges, because we have a quarantine law. That might shock some people, but pretty much it's standard. Every state has a quarantine law, but our quarantine law in New York from 1953 is full of due process protections. They right. can the Department of Health cannot just come knock on your door and haul you away.
Well, but this is why the 5-0 decision is so baffling, because what they're saying is it's fine to do the opposite of what New York state law says you must do. How is that possible?
Right.
That five judges, what? And that's why I say, what is it that would get five judges? You know, clearly at a senior, I mean, this is not just beginning judges. These are experienced judges. What would get five judges to essentially completely defy New York law?
Yeah. And we have case law that says that you know, for example, the standing issue, you know, if you are one legislator, you don't have to have a group of legislators. You don't have to have the entire legislature as a body. No. Even just one legislator has standing to sue if they believe that their power was usurped by another branch of government. That's
okay,
exactly what we've been arguing all along. And yet they said, oh, no standing. Sorry.
Okay. So before we talk about what we can all do to support you, I just want to emphasize again what an extraordinary thing it is. You have a seasoned attorney who's very knowledgeable in real estate, very knowledgeable in dealing with municipal government and overreach, to suddenly pivot and take on a major constitutional lawsuit with no significant experience in constitutional law. I'm sure you had it in law school, and, you know, we've all read the Constitution, hopefully, but you know, this is an extraordinary thing to jump your lane. Seasoned lawyers hate to jump their lane, even by an inch. This is like a quantum leap. This is like, you know, in Star Trek when they do the hyper, you know, whatever. and to then go into court and win. It's just, but one of the things I saw in your presentation when you talk about how important it is to be you know, right narrowly on scope and on the law. So you clearly know how to, you know, how important it is to be, you know, very high integrity on the issue and on the law and on the facts. So you know how to do this. You're an experienced attorney, but it's such a remarkable thing for someone to take that leap. And I know you did it because you understand how important this case is.
Yeah, I was not at all involved with civil rights. You know, I was very real estate based law before 2020. And I just, when I saw what was going on, it started in 2020, and it hasn't stopped. I saw, especially because I was in the real estate world, I saw a lot of property owners being crucified by the government, not by COVID. COVID didn't lock people down. COVID didn't shutter schools. COVID didn't tell people that they couldn't evict their tenants for non-payment of rent. That was all done by the government. And when I saw, I mean, people were reaching out to me, calling me, coming to my office, emailing me. They were begging me to help them not lose their properties because the government, and especially it was the CDC, which is the Center for Disease Control, which issued a nationwide eviction moratorium. I mean, as an attorney, that the second I heard it, my mind started blowing up. But right. Even as a non-attorney, it should strike you as odd.
I went nuts when I heard it. I went nuts. Where do they get the jurisdiction to do this?
They do not have the jurisdiction to do that. And from day one, I was going on whatever it was, radio shows or TV, you know, Real America's Voice or OAN or Epoch Times. And I was saying, they don't have the power to do this, folks. They do not have the power to do this. And sure enough, it took a year and a half, but it worked. They got sued. And it worked its way up to the United States Supreme Court. And a year and a half later, the Supreme Court struck it down and said that is an unconstitutional regulation.
Right.
The CDC does not have the authority to make that regulation. But look what it did. It destroyed so many mom and pop property owner landlords. You know, most of the landlords in this country are mom and pop. They are not these
right.
big conglomerate.
Right, but somebody picked up a lot of real estate cheap, right?
For sure. These people were going out of business because
right.
that was their livelihood, right? They save up their money. They buy a multifamily house, or maybe they buy an apartment building or whatever it may be. A lot of times the landlords live in part of that property and then they
right.
rent out the rest of the property. And it's how they make a living. It's how they feed their
right.
kids. It's how they pay for school and clothing and food and everything.
I think that CDC was part of a taking. It was part of a land grab. And it was absolutely an economic play.
The big question is, which is what I kept saying over and over again while this was going on, if you want to help people who are not able to pay their rent because of COVID lockdowns, that is a very noble thing that you want to do. Two ways you can cure that. One, get rid of the lockdowns, which shouldn't be there in the first place.
Right.
Or if you're going to keep the lockdowns, number two is give all that CARES money, the CARES Act money, to the landlords on behalf of their tenants.
Right.
So you give rent vouchers to the landlords and say, hey, you know what? Tenant A doesn't need to pay you this month. Here's that rent.
The United States government has a massive housing voucher program. They know how to do it. They've had it for decades. Right.
There you go. There you go.
There you go.
So someone needs to explain to me why they didn't do that. That is,
they didn't do it because the goal was land grab.
Well, I can't think of any other reason because otherwise, why else didn't you just give the money to the landlords on behalf of the tenants? But instead, they gave it to the tenants and they knew a lot of the tenants wouldn't pay the rent. And they didn't.
Right.
And then you saw landlords going belly up and it was heartbreaking because I couldn't help them.
Right.
I couldn't help them.
Right.
So that was a really big eye-opening experience for me. And I said, there is something wrong with this government that it would do this to its people. You are harming your people. And then it just was one thing after the next. You know, you saw the mask mandates and parents were so upset. Why does my five-year-old have to wear a mask? And they're outside in the fresh air playing soccer. They still have to wear a mask. You know, it was one thing after the next. And I just, once a member of Uniting New York State brought to me that regulation, the isolation and quarantines regulation, and said, look at this regulation. You know, is this for real? And I read it and I said, oof, fortunately, it's for real, but there's no way it's constitutional. And at that point, I was so angry with everything that the government had been doing for almost 2 years to its people that I said, if nobody else is going to bring this lawsuit to stop this, I will do it. And in order to do it, because I wasn't a constitutional law attorney, I had to, like you said, jump into that other lane. I had to teach myself, and it took all of my time and energy and resources. And in fact, I had to give up my thriving law practice to do it because I didn't have enough time, enough hours in the day, enough days in the week to continue my practice and get this lawsuit.
It's like going
done.
Back to law school at the same time. It's like learning how to, you know, fly a plane and flying it at the same time.
Yeah.
It's extraordinary.
Yeah. It was a huge undertaking. Other attorneys didn't want to get involved. You know, I contacted the civil rights organizations everybody knows, and, you know, how many checks have we all written to these organizations over the years? And no, nobody wanted to touch it. Nobody wanted to pay attention to it. And so I did it. And, you know, I'm very glad I did, because now 2+ years later, we're still fighting this, but I'm involved with other things against the government, pushing them back into their lane. I have another lawsuit that I just brought against New York State. I'm working on, a spokesperson for the redistricting saga that's going on in New York State right now over the congressional maps, you know, and it's everything that I'm working on is to preserve the Constitution, to protect the citizens against a government that is doing things that they do not have the power to do. But people don't know that because they don't teach the Constitution anymore.
Well, you know, we can all pull it out and read it. It's, you know, I try to read it every once in a while because it really helps to remember. But here's the thing. What we all have to do is we all have to help you if we can. So let's walk through. You have a website. The United New York has a website. You have a Substack, too. So we can sign up for the email list at your website. We can sign up for your Substack. How else can we so we're going to do this interview. I want everybody, if you love having private property, let alone your life, you need to get this interview, but particularly get it to the people who you'd like to see interview Bobby Ann Cox and tell this story. So we need every member of the new media to tell this story, to republish it, to do interviews with you. Tell us what we can do to get the word out.
Yeah, so it would be really helpful if people shared my work. And the best way to do that is my Substack. So anyone that's not familiar with Substack, you just go online, substack.com, and you can search my name, Bobby Ann Cox, C-O-X, and my Substack will come up. Or you can go to my website, which is coxlawyers.com, and there's a link there to connect to my Substack. But I write an article once a week, and if people sign up, it's free. I mean, you can pay for a subscription if you'd like to support my work, but it is free if you don't want to. And you sign up, and once a week, you'll get an article from me, typically on a Sunday, and it'll be something related to law and Constitution and, read the article, but then pass it along.
Right.
You know, take that article link and just post it on your social media or send it to your chat group or, you know, talk about it next time you go to a dinner party or something, because we have to spread the word. And if you can help amplify my voice, people will start to understand what is going on as far as government overreach and your rights being taken from you. And the other thing is, if people want to follow me, I'm also on Twitter, X, whatever you'd like to call it. My handle there is attorney_Cox, C-O-X. And I don't post, you know, too much, but when I post, it's always something related to the law,
right,
and our rights. So people can just repost, retweet, help spread the word. If people want to donate directly, I do have a donate button on my website, coxlawyers.com. And for larger donations, there is a nonprofit that's helping us out. So I can always give that information too.
When I went to your website, I saw that. So they can make tax deductible donations through the not-for-profit for the larger donations.
Yes.
And what would you consider larger, 1,000 or more?
Yeah, that's typically what the nonprofit promotes.
Okay.
Yeah. So, and
okay.
I welcome any donations.
I want to stress that the larger donations really look at the smaller donations. So if 1,000 people each give $5 or $10, that helps attract the bigger donations. So don't think that any amount is too small. You know, please go in and donate, because I always say, you know, a donation, even a small donation, is a prayer, and it really helps the momentum. So I want everyone to forward this to the media outlets that you are in touch with or you would like to see Bobby Ann Cox on. And I want you to stress to them that this is not about health regulations. This is about whether or not we have the rule of law and whether or not we have individual sovereignty. This is, you know, as I like to say, this is for all the marbles, this lawsuit. It's really for all the marbles. It's for your assets. It's for your property rights, your family, everything. So, and I did not realize how far-reaching it was until you got me to just read the regulation, and I was just gobsmacked. I was just, oh my God, now I understand why it's so important. So with that, I just want to thank you so much, because, you know, it took several years for you to get someone like me to understand how big this is. You know, it takes time to communicate, and it's because you've held in. Before we end, anything else you'd like to add?
Yeah, well, I would like to thank you for having me on and for helping me spread the word. I really hope that people will get involved. You know, hearing this interview, again, don't just delete the interview. You know, take the link to this interview and spread it around. It's
right.
So important, because the mainstream media doesn't cover stories like this anymore. And so it's up to the alternative media or the new media to make that happen. And we are all, as citizens, we are all part of that new media. We have to be the word of the people, because mainstream media doesn't like this kind of a story. It goes against the narrative and it makes people question things. And for anybody out there that's still kind of hesitant that this is actually not a conspiracy theory, you know, I will just remind people, you know, first of all, you can just go to my website and check it out. There's actually a lawsuit. There's actually a decision there. So this is not a conspiracy theory. But the other thing is, you know, there was an ancient Greek philosopher, Heraclitus, and he said something that is so fitting to this lawsuit and this whole thing, is the truth is often evaded because it's so hard to believe. So even though you think this is an unbelievable story, it is real. And I hope you'll share it with other people, because if we don't do things now to stand up for our rights and push back against overreach, we will wake up and we will not have any rights left. And it will happen while you're sleeping. You won't even know it.
Right. Right. Well, Bobby Ann Cox, great job. I can't thank you enough. And we've just enjoyed having you. And ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us on the Solari Report. And just remember, prove positive that one person can do remarkable things.
Thank you.
Have a great day. That was great.
Thank you so much for having me on, Catherine. I appreciate it.